It's Friday on the Monty Show, April 27th, and locked and loaded as always. I'm Monty, that's Jake.
Hello.
Hey, little buddy.
Yeah, we had another prank call awesomeness this morning. The guy figured it out, though, and hung up on me.
Very disappointing.
Kind of a bummer. But we've got to talk tons of NBA tonight. We've got the Jazz and OKC in Game 6. Salt Lake City tonight at the Viv. Right now, confidence level by percentage, 1 to 100 that the Jazz win.
80%.
80%?
Yeah, I didn't think they'll do it.
Woo, my man. We'll talk a lot of Jazz today, a lot of Pacers, Cavs today. Paul George has said he's serious about a team that's not the Lakers. We'll talk about that. Josh Allen, is Josh Allen a racist, and does he have to apologize for those tweets? And I don't know what to say about North and South Korea. The Korean Peninsula absolutely had a massive breakthrough today. We've got all kinds of good stuff today.
A minutia.
The minutia is good today. I agree with that. All right, make sure you find us online, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, TheMontyShow.com. You can find our podcast anywhere you want. Anywhere you are, that's where we are. So on your phone, are you an Android user? Google Play. Are you an Apple guy because you're cool like me? That's right. iTunes, SoundCloud for everybody. The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Why don't we get to work with the NBA playoffs? Because I know the NFL Draft Day 2 is going on and everybody's still fired up about that. But this Jazz OKC game and Pacers Cavs tonight, I'm as excited about those as I can possibly be. Like, it is not often that I get all wrapped up in a game or a series.
Yeah.
But I do believe that this Jazz Thunder series has been the best first round series.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly been the most controversial by far. I mean, I think the only thing that
But is that good? Does that make it?
I think it's good for the NBA because that's definitely the second tier series to LeBron James versus the world, as always. So, you know,
I agree with that.
I think this tonight's going to be a big moment for the Jazz and that franchise. I think they take care of business. I could even see them running away at the end. I just think they're a better team.
Well, I think they're a better team in Salt Lake City. I'm not ready to pronounce the Jazz a better team on the road yet. I don't know that that's fair because we haven't seen that. They've played much better at home, I think. But the one thing that stands out to me is the Paul George effect. Paul George got loose in Game 5. And regardless of what happened with Rudy Gobert, it just doesn't matter. Paul George got loose. Then all of a sudden you had Russ started to hit shots.
Yeah.
I think the Jazz switched off a little bit. I think you can leave that game behind if you're confident enough to leave that game behind. And what I mean by that is the Jazz have to believe in who they are and what got them here. And I think that that's what Quinn Snyder is best at. I think Quinn is very good at dialing in his team mentally. And I think, obviously, Donovan Mitchell, who I think should be the rookie of the year, he's remarkably mature. And the French rejection, Rudy Gobert, which I think is one of the greatest nicknames in the history of sports, the French rejection, I think he's ready to rock and roll. I think he wants redemption. Because, and rightly or wrongly, okay, there's a lot of people who say Rudy Gobert being out of that game and only playing 12 minutes is why they lost.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. I know it had a big impact on the Jazz, but I do think if he plays that, if he plays his normal, 18 more minutes, if he plays, 20 minutes, if he is playing 38 minutes that night, yeah, I think there's probably a real good chance it doesn't end like that.
Yeah, and I would agree with you, but I do think we disagree on the Jazz being a better team. The Jazz were beating OKC at home by 25. They're a better team. When they're at their best, they are better than OKC's best, in my opinion, because of the chemistry, because of their ability to find Ingles in the corner wide open consistently in this series. And I think a lot of it is OKC's inability to make adjustments, and I think we'll see that again tonight. I don't think they're going to cover that corner the way they should. I mean, if I'm OKC, I've got a guy dedicated to the weak side at this point. I mean, it's been exploited the entire series.
Nobody supports the Jazz more than I do. And I do support that club. They're not at their best, better than Oklahoma City when they're playing their best. When you have Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, I mean, when you have those three guys, Steven Adams is a real force when he's playing well. When you have those guys playing as a cohesive unit, I don't care who the fifth guy on the floor is. They're better than the Jazz. I don't think that's slighting the Jazz. I think that's just the truth. Oklahoma City, though, hasn't been able to deal emotionally in this series, especially at the Viv. They haven't been able to do that. They haven't been able to be composed. They have not figured out that you cannot sag off the three-point line against the Jazz because they knock them down. They're leaving guys like Joe Ingles, who has gotten in the head of Paul George. They're leaving him open. They're sagging off of him to double team. That's a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And it's why I say it critically tonight that Donovan Mitchell and Ricky Rubio have to get in the paint. And if it's not Donovan Mitchell, whoever the other guard is, because they generally play with three guys who can handle the ball, whoever that third guy is, has got to get in the paint and drive and kick. They've got to play inside-out basketball for the Jazz to win this game tonight to close out. Because this is Game 7. If you go back to Oklahoma City, I have zero confidence that the Jazz will win a Game 7 in OKC.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just view it differently. They had that Game 1, and their mistake was letting up. I mean, that was their mistake. I mean, yeah, Gobert went out with foul trouble. I get that. And they're a different team without him. You had a 25-point lead. You should be able to put that team away.
But what happened? Why did they blow that lead? Part of it was frustration. Part of it was that they could not figure out what to do without Rudy. When Russ started attacking the rim, when guys were getting in the paint, when they started, Russell Westbrook started knocking that jumper down and the Jazz seemingly had no answer. And a lot of that is because they could get inside, so Russ had more space to operate. That won't be the case. I think Rudy, at some point, the NBA officials are going to have to stop screwing the Jazz. Because if you read the website, I've got two videos up there that are plain and simply not fouls on the Jazz that were obvious calls made in favor of Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
At some point, that has to turn. The Jazz are playing too well. They're working too hard. They've earned that. And I know that the Jazz are not sexy, and I know that the NBA would much rather have the Oklahoma City Thunder into the second round of the playoffs. There's no question about that.
Yeah,
I agree. But at some point, good basketball has to prevail, right?
Yeah. I just think it would be best if they called an even series. And I'm totally for, you know, home court advantage and giving the home team the benefit of the doubt in some situations. I mean, that's part of home court advantage. But it can't be a thing where you're blatantly pushing OKC through it. It just can't be.
Exactly. It can't. That's what really bothers me. When you look at this series, what is it that you say, okay, for the Jazz to win tonight, they have to do what?
I think foul trouble is a big one. I think that is the way that OKC can get to the Jazz, because I think the Jazz have been pounding OKC with ball movement, and that's really been the thing that has separated the Jazz and allowed them to really just build lead.
The extra pass.
Yeah, the extra pass, and really making the right pass, you know, and that may not be an extra pass, but you get what I'm trying to say. So
it's Derek Favors kicking it out. It is.
You know, it's Crowder on the wing when he's got, you know, a foot of space and could have taken the shot, but pushing it to the corner for a wide open shot. That's the extra pass.
Well, and the question is, who's an easier matchup for the Rockets? Periscope has a very good point here. In the grand scheme of things, who's the easier matchup for the Houston Rockets? Well,
I think it's OKC for sure.
I think it's absolutely OKC because the Jazz are a nightmare. Let's be honest about it. You can look at a lot of different things with the Jazz. There's nothing easy about going head to head with the Utah Jazz. Nothing. They are a very difficult matchup. They are always in your face.
Yeah.
They, in my mind, they do a really good job of taking your space away, which I think you'll see again tonight. But I think this is a must win. I'm only 60% sure that they're going to win, because this is when we find out who the Jazz are. You blow a 25-point lead on the road in a closeout game, it's not easy to return from that. It's not easy to be who you were before that.
If we see the Jazz team that lost the Celtics game on a Jaylen Brown three, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
If we see the Jazz team that dominated OKC in OKC by 25 points and they finish the game like they have the rest of the series, because let's be honest, the Jazz have dominated at the end of quarters.
I would agree.
They have absolutely finished quarters strong, and that's really what you have to do in the playoffs to win. I mean, you can be terrible through the middle of the quarter, but if you can finish and have that momentum going to the next period, you're in really good shape. I feel really good that they get this win tonight.
Well, the other thing that I think we have to talk about is Derek Favors has to have an impact. Because when he's rebounding, just give me double-digit rebounds.
Yeah.
The second chance opportunities, the fast break opportunities in transition for OKC, can't have that. And the Jazz are going to shoot threes. That's part of their DNA. And I don't have any problem with that. But you cannot have a situation where they become reliant on the three, even when they're dreadful.
Yeah.
You have to get back. And they did not get back in the second half the other night. And I think that was just as much a part of what happened in that game as the Rudy Gobert foul trouble, was that the Jazz did not get back in transition.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't stay disciplined. They didn't hold true to the formula and the format to beat OKC. I mean, if you can get back and set your defense, even if Gobert is in foul trouble on the bench, you're going to make life on the Thunder very difficult. I mean, when you look at, you know, who's going to score for OKC, it's most likely going to be one of their big three, right? I mean, that's obvious. It's not been Russ just lighting it up every game. He lit it up for a half. I don't think that means he's going to light it up tonight at the Viv.
Yeah. Is OKC a real threat to the Rockets?
No. I just don't see it.
I don't think so
because,
either.
Because, listen, when we were going into this series, Jazz, OKC, what were we talking about? Well, who's going to mess with Rudy Gobert? Well, obviously Steven Adams. Okay, well then, who's going to stop them? Who's going to affect them? You know, I just think that the OKC Thunder don't have that cohesiveness and that chemistry that teams like the Rockets do or the Jazz do.
I would completely agree.
And that's really what separates these teams from the Thunder. But if I'm Paul George, this here is a huge moment in my career. If they win this game and then go on to win the series, I think that really makes his life difficult this summer when he's deciding what he's going to do. I don't know, though.
It's interesting you talk about Paul George and the makeup of this team. They lose this game. And I'm not trying to be redundant. I know I've said this every day this week, but if they get knocked out here, if Oklahoma City gets knocked out, I think real damage is done to Russell Westbrook's legacy. I think it's very difficult if you are Russell Westbrook to sell the NBA on your superstardom when you are not capable of beating a first-round opponent, no matter
Which
who that first-round opponent who it is. But it doesn't matter who it is. Superstars, and when you have a collective of superstars, and let's not put Carmelo in there, but when you have two superstars and the Jazz have none, how are you getting beat? Well, you're getting beat because fundamentally you're terrible. You're getting beat because Russell Westbrook has not shot well and has really not played well in this series.
I was going to say, has he been a factor in the series?
Oh, sure, he's a factor. Russell Westbrook's always a factor, but he's not the triple-double factor that he usually is. And that's because the playoffs are different. I think if you look up and down the teams that are winning and losing in these playoffs, look at this Cavs-Pacers series. LeBron James is affecting the outcome of every possession. In the fourth quarter, LeBron James is that guy, and I know it's I don't know, cliche, is that the right way to say that he refuses to lose? And when you are that guy and you are LeBron James and you're affecting every possession, your team's better for that. Carmelo Anthony affects every possession in the wrong way.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook affects a lot of possessions in the wrong way. And that, to me, look at the Boston Celtics. Keith Smart, Marcus Smart, excuse me, and Kyrie Irving, the loss of those two guys is massive. And the way that they have been impacted is massive. And then I look at the fact that they've got to go to Milwaukee now in a 3-3 series.
Good luck.
Good luck. I mean, I don't. Who's going to pick against Giannis at home? Like, on the road, even at home for Boston, I'm not picking against Giannis in a game seven.
Yeah.
I mean, at home, I would have Boston as the underdog. As crazy as that sounds. Now, Vegas has them. I think the last time I looked this morning, it was 4.5 in favor of Vegas.
Yeah.
But I absolutely would pick Milwaukee over Boston tomorrow.
I think, again, I'm being redundant, but again, this is a huge moment for a Giannis in the Bucks franchise. Ugh. I mean, his story, where he's come from to get to this point, to know that, you know, this is really his first go into the playoffs in a meaningful way. And I just think if he were to win this game, there's no measuring how much of that him and the team are going to grow from that. If they lose, he's still going to grow. And I
but think, what if Boston loses? Nobody's going to say two words about Boston because of Damn Gordon all year. Kyrie's had this knee surgery.
Well, this is all icing on the cake. You're right about that.
I mean, nobody's going to question them lose. Brad Stevens isn't in a single stitch of trouble in Boston.
But I think even if they win or if they lose, either way, this first round for them has been a huge learning experience for guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Imagine what that team's going to be like when they're healthy. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are starting on that team.
Well, think about the Pelicans tomorrow. Look
yeah,
at
that's going to be nuts.
Warriors and Pelicans. Nuts. The Pelicans don't belong here. Well, only they do because they destroyed, and now they're on to Golden State.
I love the word dismantled. That's the word that's been used in that against that them against Portland.
Oh,
and
man.
I love that word because that's exactly what it was. It wasn't like, oh, well, they were just the better team and they played better fundamentals. No, they went out and dismantled Portland. I mean, absolutely shut Dame down, and I got to give them credit.
They've had a week off.
Listen, yeah, they've rested, and I think they look good in this Golden State series. I think this will be a deep series. I would be surprised if this was a five-gamer and Golden State just runs away.
Well, the problem is Golden State is not equipped to deal with the matchups that Anthony Davis is gonna bring. You know, the guy that nobody's talking about is Mirotić. Mirotić is not an easy guard when he's playing well because he shoots well from the outside and he can finish a little bit in the paint. He's a little soft. But you also have guys like Etuan Moore, who I know you couldn't care less about. But I'm telling you, Etuan Moore is a difference maker. Rajon Rondo is playing remarkably well for an older guy.
I agree. I agree with you 100% on everything you just said. I just think there's an interesting dynamic in this series. You talk about matchups, and you talk about how that may swing in the favor of New Orleans. I think it goes both ways. I think this is going to be an offensive series to the max. I don't think there will be defensive struggles in this series. I think it's whoever is going to score the most points, straight up.
I think when you look at the fact that the Pels are going to come out with three guards, essentially, and Holiday is playing excellent basketball,
yep.
I think Golden State, this is a 6 or 7 game series. I think Golden State finds a way to win, but Steph Curry is going to be on a minutes limitation now for Golden State, it turns out. So he's probably only playing 20. You know, I don't have a real good read on this series.
Do you like the minutes restriction thing?
He's had a knee and an ankle injury. You have to. Because if he goes down, you're done. I love Kevin Durant. I love
the
Warriors.
Well, they're a different team with Steph on the floor. There's no doubt.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Their flow, their swag,
their creativity level. When you watch the Warriors without Steph, it's a dry product. It is a boring product. And when he's on the floor, it just goes to another level. It's the play I always point to is Curry drives into the paint, realizes he doesn't have a way to get to the rim, dribbles around in a circle, and finds Klay Thompson for a deep three that just energizes Oracle. Like, that's what they don't have when Steph's not on the floor.
And by the way, the Pelicans are 100% healthy. Again,
they're
coming off of 6 days. And I know that the line is well in favor of Golden State. I think it's almost 9 points.
Dude, it's not going to be that much.
No, I don't think so. I think it's going to be a dogfight. And just watching this Cavs game right now, on in the background here as we do the Monty Show, I love what the Cavs are doing right now, and I love that because Korver and J.R. Smith are the ones scoring the points for them, and that's a big, big deal for the Cavs because LeBron can't be the only guy that's scoring points for them.
Yeah. Real quick, we talked about Russ's legacy in that series.
Mm-hmm.
What does it do to KD's legacy when Anthony Davis is going to put up better numbers than he will in this series?
It's all about wins and losses. It's all about wins and losses. And for Kevin Durant, there is a sect of NBA minds that believe without Steph Curry, he's a better player. And without Steph Curry, they're not as good of a team. And that's a real problem. Because if Kevin Durant is better without Steph, but the Warriors are worse without Steph,
which they clearly are,
what does that say about Kevin Durant? He to me, they're really good the more important guy, if Steph's not going to be there, Klay Thompson's got to be nails, and Dre's got to play the way that he played in the closeout game. But Kevin Durant's got to be 35 points a game. He's got to be, he's got to, and really, that Kevin Durant isn't a double-double guy on a nightly basis is shocking. He should be 35 and 10 in the playoffs every single night. And he should probably have five dimes as well.
Yeah.
So I think Kevin Durant's legacy is what's going to be questioned. If they win, I almost think it doesn't matter if he scores 2 points a game. Okay, as long as they win the series.
Yeah.
If he struggles and they lose and Steph is limited to 15 to 20 minutes a night, he's in trouble.
Yeah.
Because people will start talking. And by the way, the other thing about the Warriors that not a lot of people are talking about right now is this the contract where Kevin Durant told Tim Kawakami on his podcast that, hey, I'm not taking a $10 million write-down this year. I'm not giving a hometown discount this year. Because remember, Kevin Durant walked away from $10 million to help them bring back Iguodala. And, hey, more power to him because that was the right thing to do. But it's time, and I think he realizes that. If they win another championship, I'm sure he's going back there, but it's not going to come cheap.
Yeah.
It is not going to come cheap. So I think it's a fascinating time for the Warriors. It's a really important time. Steph's got to play, and he's got to play well. And if that happens, I'll feel a lot better about this series. LeBron James, what if they lose this game?
That is the ultimate question, isn't it?
Because then we go back to Cleveland for a game seven.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cleveland it has this series in the bag. I just think
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I really think they do. Going back to Cleveland for game seven, there's not a chance in hell I'd pick the Pacers over LeBron at home. There's just not going to happen. But I think, you know, tonight I wouldn't put it past LeBron to win this game, and especially with the idea that Korver and JR are contributing. That's what they need to win. It is the nights where, you know, guys like JR and Korver and Jeff Green and Clarkson and Nance are just not contributing on any level.
They haven't figured out how to use Nance yet.
No, and it's shocking to me. With a guy like LeBron James on your team, how do you not figure it out?
How do you not just pick and roll teams to death? You know,
100%.
And the issue is that Larry Nance is not a great jump shooter. His mid-range, he's, you know, obviously he can get to the rack and finish with the best of anybody in the league.
Yeah.
But he needs to be able to knock down a 15-footer. And right now, that's not who he is as a player. We'll see if he evolves into that.
He is young, though, and I think people do kind of put that on the back burner. The guy is a young player.
Yeah.
He has a lot of developing to do.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. But, you know, we also talked about the comparison of Jordan Clarkson to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope today.
A fair question.
I would take KCP over Jordan Clarkson. From what I've seen of Clarkson, I'm really disappointed in Jordan Clarkson in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like, he's not been the player that the Cavs needed him to be. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a guy that will just show up and drop bombs on you.
I mean, he's a 20-point-a-night guy.
Yeah.
Like, off your bench in Cleveland, you know, and that's exactly what they need. They need to – LeBron needs to be able to sit for 2 minutes and not worry about losing a 15-point lead, yeah. You know?
Hey, let's talk about Paul George real quick, too, because speaking of PG – what do you make of this story today that he is going to seriously consider signing with the Sixers in the summer?
He wants to win. Straight up. He wants to win. And I think that winning mentality took him to OKC, but I think it hasn't worked out the way he'd like. And I think depending on the way this Jazz series goes and how far they go into the playoffs this year will really go to his decision on where he'd like to go. I do think he would fit really nicely in Philadelphia. It's a young team. Yeah, Ben Simmons and him would be a lethal combination. You got a guy like J.J. Redick who can just knock it down.
But what does that do to guys like Bellinelli? I mean, all that does is strengthen their bench.
Well,
is
listen,
what it
I'm
does.
I don't care. I mean, if you have Paul George, he's on the floor.
Yeah, and that's a young team that is, you know, under contract, you know, club control, we call it in legalese, but all of their main guys are club control.
They're in that window, let's be honest.
Yeah.
They're in that window.
And why are they in that window? And again, not to be redundant this week,
yes,
but I feel like tanking has come up every single day.
Yes.
They followed the process.
Yes.
And so you have all of your best players, and Fultz now is developing, but you have, so Embiid, Simmons, Fultz. If you add Paul George to that, and then you throw in the Covingtons of the world, the Reddicks of the world, the Bellinellis of the world, those secondary players, it makes the 76ers good for several years.
Yes.
I think that's what's attractive to Paul George. Because the flip side is, well, I'm going to go the other way and go to Los Angeles to be with the Lakers, which is what everybody thought. The Lakers need help. The Sixers don't need help. He's almost the cherry on top. Because next year, that Sixer team's probably going to be, what, 0.25% better?
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to improve just by the clock ticking and the calendar turning.
Yes.
And I think the Lakers are not in that position. The Lakers, you know, have to go and get LeBron to commit. They have to go and make a Kawhi Leonard trade.
Yeah, they're not in a position to win right now.
Yeah.
To really make Paul George feel like, yes, we will contend in the Western Conference. We will be top five seed. That's not who they are right now.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be that way for you know, at least two seasons, in my opinion.
Well, I think L.A. is a lot more attractive to guys than Philly. Not because of winning, but because of what's going on off the court. The only reason LeBron James is going to L.A. is because he owns a movie studio, and he's got you know, Hollywood production aspirations, and which he's already doing, by the way. He's thinking about his post-career. A guy like Paul George is coming into his prime, and he's thinking about stacking titles. I think they'll do that in Los Angeles. If Paul George goes there, it's just going to take another year to do it. And I don't know that he's willing to wait that year.
Does he have another year to give?
Oh, yeah, absolutely he does. He absolutely does. He missed a year with the broken leg. The miles are not as
stacked.
Heavy on him.
Yeah.
He has missed a lot of playoff basketball. So I do think that there's time there. But I understand why he would go to Philly. That place, just the Meek Mill situation the other night,
yeah.
How lit that joint was. And
quality of town, sports town, and quality
and,
of fan.
Whoa. By the way, I also think that it is incredibly important to recognize that you have an owner there that reached out to perhaps the most important African-American entertainer, and let's put it bluntly, the most important black entertainer in the moment.
Yes.
In Meek Mill. Who represents everything that black athletes care about, whether that is oppression or injustice, social issues. You have a wealthy, wealthy owner of the Sixers who said, I'm not going to stand for this. Don't care if I'm white or black. I'm a human being and I'm not going to stand for this. And I think that matters.
It does.
You said something the other day, and I still disagree with it. I think Robert Kraft was involved with Meek Mill because he wanted to be. Robert Kraft wasn't involved with Meek because he thought it was good for courting black players in the NFL.
I think it's good for that. I think it's a good business decision for Kraft and the
Patriots. I think it's a humanitarian thing.
Maybe.
But here nor there,
yeah.
in NBA free agency, boy, I think that's currency.
Yeah.
Think when you go there, Paul George doesn't have to wonder if he's going to be referred to as a slave or a prisoner by his owner. Bob McNair, I think, said you can't let the prisoners run the prison or whatever he said, or the jail.
Inmates.
The inmates run the, yeah. You don't have to worry about that in Philadelphia with the Sixers.
Yeah.
I think that matters.
Oh,
I really think
that's currency. I totally agree. It does matter. And I think quality of owner matters. It absolutely matters because it speaks to where the franchise is going. Where are we going to be in 4 or 5 years? Can I count on you to not pick Baker Mayfield with a number one overall pick and do the right thing?
Yeah.
You know, it's things like that matter to guys like Paul George and other stars in the NBA. I don't blame him for going there if he goes there.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting for certain. It will be interesting to see how all of that plays out.
Yeah.
But I think that the Sixers have a real good chance to get Paul George. It's just a matter of how long will Paul George wait? Does Paul George want to be under contract at midnight of free agency, or does he want to wait and see where LeBron goes? Because if he's smart, I think he waits and sees where LeBron goes.
Yeah.
Because if you play with LeBron, and if you are pitched by the Lakers, and this is what I think will happen, I think that Paul George will want to be courted. And he will fly out to LA, and he will meet with the Lakers, and he'll fly to Philly and meet with the Sixers if they're interested. I think they will all sit down, and the Lakers will say, here's what we're trying to do, and we want you to be the centerpiece. We want to keep Julius Randle. We want you to be a part of what develops Lonzo Ball. You know, hey, look, here's Magic Johnson. Hey, look, here's, you know, ideally you get LeBron under contract, but that's not going to happen at midnight. It's not. That's going to be a chase. But I think Paul George is going to have a hell of a time saying no to Los Angeles. It's a hometown guy.
Yeah.
I think he's going to have a real difficult time saying no to that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think if I'm Paul George, I want that catbird seat. I want to be able to see, hey, where's LeBron going? Where is he going to sign? And then I also want to entertain every single offer that anybody's willing to give me. And I want to see what the interest level is from different teams around the league. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, sure, he knows. I'm sure he's got a top three list in his head already.
Oh, no.
He knows where he wants to go.
And this is where you and I disagree. Paul George knows where he's going. Paul George knows, and maybe he knows who the leader is.
Mm-hmm.
But he would be a fool not to get a free flight and a free dinner out of it.
Yeah.
Just to listen? Sure. Absolutely, I'm going to do that. You know, I think it's... Yeah, I think it's interesting, is what I'll say. I think it's really interesting. And I find it fascinating that Paul George is in this position that he's in. I mean, I find it fascinating.
Couldn't be better.
Yeah, I will really look forward to free agency this summer because I think it's going to be fascinating. Hey, I want to talk Josh Allen, drafted by the Bills. This was a big story yesterday. Bills traded up. It was interesting that hours before the draft, the stories of Josh Allen as a 14-year-old high school kid dropping racist bombs on his Twitter feed and N-bombs and Nazi references and just the most horrid stuff from a white quarterback clearly did not play well in Buffalo. And clearly... Josh Allen's got some work to do to overcome that. And what we're told is the Bills knew about this before it became public, which you would expect because now in this day and age, teams scrub your social media before they even talk to you.
Yeah.
So you would guess they knew. The Pegula family, who owns the Bills, met with Josh Allen and said, tell me about this. And he apparently owned up to it and said, you know, I was 14 years old, you know, whatever he said. But he is in a position where his teammates now want to hear him talk about why he did that and who he is. Should he have to apologize to the Buffalo Bills, his teammates? Should he have to apologize for what he tweeted when he was 14 years old?
Yeah, I mean, I think if they want him to apologize, if they want to hear his story, then yeah, he needs to do it. And I think rather than it being a chore for him to do that or any kind of like challenge... For me, that's an opportunity if I'm Josh Allen. I would rather speak my truth and tell people what it is rather than them speculating about who I was, you know, 10 years ago or however long it is now that he did that. And I think, yeah, I would do it. And I think I would turn it into a positive rather than a negative. Tell your story. Tell them your growth. Tell them, hey, here's where I'm at now, and this is who I am, and this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
I acknowledge the fact that, yeah, I messed up. I should not have said those things. That was a complete and blatant mistake. And once he does that and owns up to that, because what is the NFL? It's the ultimate accountability in that locker room. That is all NFL guys care about, accountability.
Does it matter because he's white?
I think,
and there is a large percentage of the NFL that is black.
I mean, I think it's in the back of everybody's head that is a reason for it, but I don't think publicly that's ever going to be a reason for it.
I think it is exactly why he has to do it. Because I look at the climate in the NFL right now, and I see a white quarterback, and I think the first thing that black players in the NFL do is compare Josh Allen to Colin Kaepernick and to Eric Reed. And there will be some players in Buffalo who are upset that Josh Allen was drafted. That not only was he drafted, they traded up to get him. And I think that will not sit well with everybody in the NFL. And I think if this was truly Josh Allen, just being a kid who didn't know any better.
Thought it was cool because his friends were doing it.
Yeah, was not worldly or whatever this turned out to be. he's going to have to be sincere, and he's going to have to really, if he's smart, he'll just open up his heart.
Yeah.
Now, if he's not a racist.
Because that's a possibility.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it is. If you're not a racist and you don't drop N-bombs on a regular basis and you don't hate black people, because it's kind of what your Twitter looked like when you were 14, you hated black people.
Yeah.
If you're not a racist, you just need to open up your heart and tell the truth.
Yeah.
And if you're a racist, I don't know. Because I'm telling you, they will feast on him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't deserve to be in the NFL if he truly believes that stuff. So one way or the other, it'll happen. I mean, listen, the worst thing in the world is a racist who's a good liar. Because then you don't know. Guys like Josh Allen that say things like he said and believe them, those are the best kind of racists, because now they just put a big sign around their neck that said, hey, by the way, I'm a racist. So you know they're a racist. They're out in the light.
Yeah.
It's the people who are, but it's the people who are behind the scenes, who are in the shadows, that worry you. So Josh Allen's got to be, he's got to make the case that I was a 14-year-old idiot. I was a high school kid and I was doing this, or I was going through that, or whatever it was. He's got to be terribly compelling, because if he's not, his career is going to be short. Because if you're ostracized in an NFL locker room, you're Ryan Leaf. You're done.
Yeah.
People are not going to defend you. Your teammates are not going to support you. The quarterback room is going to be very difficult. Oh, by the way, they traded their starting quarterback, and Tyrod Taylor happens to be a black man that was very popular in that locker room, that his teammates wanted him there and wanted him to start. You know, remember, they benched Tyrod Taylor for a rookie who was absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
And then they dumped him. And so now you draft a kid in Josh Allen who's a white guy who happens to have tweeted racist hate speech.
Yeah.
That's not going to just go away on its own.
No. And look, I think that's a really great point. I mean, you put all those things together and now we're here. And so now he's going to have to get over those hurdles. But I also agree that it doesn't need to be this doesn't need to be some Grammy award winning speech.
This needs to be 5 minutes. He needs to say his piece.
He needs to say, hey, look, dude, here's what I did when I was 14. It's wrong. It is not who I am. And I will prove to you that that's not who I am.
And then he needs to stop talking and start listening. Because there are going to be guys in that locker room who are going to say to him, what if his teammates say, I'm never going to forgive you? That's something he's going to have to
overcome.
Look,
I don't know what you don't turn the tides like that with words in that case.
Absolutely not.
That's a time and an effort thing. That's an action thing.
If you look at Chance the Rapper today, Chance the Rapper came out and defended Kanye West, and Kanye West had snuggled up to Donald Trump, and there were a lot of people who were disappointed in Chance the Rapper because Chance kind of looked like he was defending Donald Trump and snuggling up to Donald Trump like Kanye was. Well, what did Chance do? He got on Twitter and absolutely laid it out and said, I made a mistake. I'm sorry if you felt like I supported Donald Trump, and I would never support a guy, because Chance is from Chicago, by the way.
Yeah.
I'd never support a guy who said those things about Chicago and then, you know, just forsake us. And he said, don't forgive me for my words. Forgive me because I showed you that that's not who I am. And I am going to start immediately showing you that's not who I am.
Yeah.
And if Josh Allen were smart, he'd take that exact same tact. Because race right now in the NFL, we might not be talking about it. Yeah, sure. Race in our country right now. Donald Trump ripping people in Chicago and Latinos and Mexicans coming over the border and, Central American caravans and DACA, all this stuff is front and center. And you really, man, I'm telling you, you don't get a second chance.
Nope.
You don't get a second chance. If you are a racist, you are going to be a pariah. And really, I would hope that would be whether you're a cab driver or you work at Taco Bell or you're an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
If you're a racist, you should be cast out. And I would like to think that Josh Allen's not, but he's going to have to prove that.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. Major League Baseball. The last couple of days, we've kind of gotten away from one of the things that I consider a passion. Because, you know, frankly, the NFL draft has been going on, and things have gotten a little crazy. But I actually sat down today and enjoyed some Chicago Cubs baseball. Well, I should say the Javier Baez's.
Yeah, showcase tournament.
You know, because he's been unbelievable. And Yu Darvish actually pitched well today.
Bounced back.
Cubs won. They're now 5-1 this year against crappy Brewers.
Dude, they're better than the Brewers. And if you still think the Brewers are winning that division, that's the Cubs division to lose all day long.
Yeah, well, the pitching problems that we talked about have really become an issue now for them. But let's play a little baseball game here. It's early or you're panicking. Okay? The Boston Red Sox are 19-5 and 4 games up on the New York Yankees, man. To quote Tony Montana, but the New York Yankees are 15-9. Is it early or are you panicked?
I still think it's early. I think Stan's got to find himself, man. I mean, I know early initially in the first 2 weeks of the season, it was boom or bust, essentially. He was either hitting a home run or striking out 5 times in a game and making headlines. You know, he yeah, needs to find I the middle so. A little bit, you know. I think if he does that and Boone can find a lineup that really works for that team, I think they'll be fine. You know, I'm not ready to say that they're outright better than the Red Sox based on the way the Red Sox have been able to play and perform. But I think it's very close when both teams are ready to go and when Stanton's not striking out 5 times in a game and playing bad baseball.
Red Sox or Yankees?
I'm still gonna take the Yankees.
Oh, stop it!
I'm still gonna take the Yankees for the entire season.
I'm sorry. Wait, let me rephrase. Red Sox or Yankees?
I'm still taking the Yankees.
You're a dope. Okay. I'm absolutely taking the Red Sox because of that pitching. By the way, Giancarlo Stanton has kind of gotten it going a little bit. He had that 4-hit game against the Twins. You know, I think he's starting to hit. Yesterday, he was 2-for-4, scored 2 runs. He's got 5 bombs, so I think he's going to wake up eventually. He's too good not to.
He's fine in the middle now. I mean, getting singles and doubles and things like that are can only help you.
Didi Gregorius has 9 bombs.
Yankee Stadium.
He lifts weights. I think I'll ask you the same questions about your Boston Red Sox, who you hate. Boston's 19-5. They've only given up 71 runs. They've scored 136.
Pretty good differential.
Now, is it early or are they really good?
No, they're legit. I don't think it's early when it comes to them. They're legit, no doubt about it. And I'm not discounting what they're capable of doing. And really, let's be honest, this season is about getting back to the Astros series. I mean, that's what this season's about.
Yep.
You've got to get all the way back to playing the Astros in the championship series.
Who are just dominating people on the bump.
It's Verlander and Cole.
Good Lord.
And then everybody else in McCullers, and you put that rotation together and look out, man.
The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim are 16-9. Is it early or are they really good?
I think it's still early. I think I'm not discounting Ohtani's ability. I'm not saying that the guy doesn't have the ability to dominate you when he's a pitcher.
The problem with the Angels is they're raking and they're losing.
Yeah.
That's the problem. They're really hitting the ball. Let's go another team that's a bit of a surprise. The New York Mets are 15-8. Is it early or are they really good?
I think it's early with them too. I think they are capable of dominating because of that pitching, but I think their bats are going to cool off a little bit. They've really been hitting, and I think, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint. You know, so you get into the middle of May and they're still doing this. Okay, maybe the conversation is a little different.
Yes.
But I think they will cool off a little bit. But as long as their pitching is good, they're a force.
The Washington Nationals are 11-14, 5 off the Mets in the East. Is it early or are you panicking?
I'm not panicking yet. I still think it's early. Like I was just saying about the Mets. The Mets have lit the world on fire. I think the Nationals will catch them. I think, you know, the Nationals will rise. The Mets will fall. We'll all come back to the middle, and that division is still going to be a 2 or 3 game race the whole year.
The Cubs are 13-10. They're a game and a half behind the division leading St. Louis Cardinals. Is it early or are they just mediocre?
I think their pitching has let them down, but I'm still saying it's early. I still think, you know, last week we were talking about how the Pirates were the best team in the division and how they're doing great things. It's
14-11. That's pretty good.
I mean, I know. And I know the numbers don't say that the Cubs are the best team, but their roster says they're the best team. And I think, again, when you start thinking about, okay, once we get into the middle of May, June, I think that's when upper-end talent starts to take over. Once Yu Darvish finds his groove, when it warms up, because where's he pitched? L.A. and Texas, warm markets.
Here's the flaw. Here's the flaw in that theory. Dexter Fowler's still hitting .182. And they're not playing their best baseball yet. The biggest problem I see with that division is the teams that you would expect to contend don't have the balance of offense and defense. So if you look at the St. Louis Cardinals, the biggest issue here is Michael Wacha is a 3.62 ERA. Luke Weaver is a 4.85. Miles Mikolas is a 3.46. Then there's Carlos Martinez, who's 2-1, and he's got a 1.43 with a 1.06 whip for a starting pitcher. It's freaking ridiculous.
Dominance.
Yeah, that's it. Like, that's all they have.
That's what I'm saying.
This is a problem with the Brewers. So I, as a Cub fan, yes, it's still early, but I think they win the division. Because I think they will sputter the way they're sputtering now, but their sputter won't be a 5-game losing streak. Their sputter will be a 2-game losing streak. They'll win 2, they'll lose 3, they'll win 2, they'll lose 3. And that's going to be good enough because the pitching in this division is terrible. So they're going to hit Milwaukee and St. Louis and Pittsburgh. It's just a matter of when does Yu Darvish start pitching this way consistently? How long are you gonna struggle with John Lester? Those are my biggest concerns. Because listen, man, when I look at the Cubs, it's not early anymore. This is just who this team is. And when you look at that starting rotation, who's going to be the fifth guy? Because it ain't going to be Tyler Chatwood, I can tell you that right now. Not with a 3.74, but hell, is he your biggest problem when Yu Darvish is a 5.26? You know, Johnny's 2-1. He's got a 3.29. That's not terrible in this day and age. But Kyle Hendricks, 2-1 with a 3.10. So everybody who thought this rotation was going to be unbelievable, I think you've been let down a little bit because Jose Quintana's got a 7.78.
Yeah. Yeah, I said at the beginning of this argument, the pitching has let them down, and it has. Outright, it's let them down.
And at West, is it early or are you worried as a Dodger fan? Oh, you're worried as a... Don't even hesitate.
You're worried as a Dodger fan. Yeah, I mean, I think Dodger fans are worried, but...
5.5 behind Arizona, and you're a game under?
Dude, the whole division's worried. The whole division's hitting the panic button, let's be honest. The Giants are, panic button. The Dodgers, panic button, because they got dominated by the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks are sitting pretty at the top of that division. The Padres, there is no panic or too early. You're developing talent. You're
if
not
one more
contending.
Person says they're tanking, I swear.
It's embarrassing. If you say the Padres are tanking, you don't know baseball.
That's ridiculous. Is it early for the San Francisco Giants?
I don't think it's early. I really think, Hunter Pence is a huge problem for them. And I get that he's hurt, but I think his time is gone. I think the special nature and that quirkiness that we always loved about Pence is no longer good enough anymore. I don't think he's an everyday player anymore. I think Evan Longoria, yes, he's starting to heat up. I need him to be the same old Evan that he's been in Tampa for his entire career.
Well, as a Giant fan, you should be a huge Kansas City Royal fan.
Yeah.
And you should be thanking them. Do you know why? Because if it wasn't for the Kansas City Royals, you'd have the worst offense in baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the God's honest truth. They've scored 76 runs. Now, they've given up less than 100, but they've got the first thing, and this is a rule, as a baseball fan, this is a rule you can live by. Don't talk to me about the division or it's early until you're at 500.
Yeah.
And they're 2-under. The Dodgers are a game under. The Rockies are 14-12, and they've given up 130 runs.
Yeah.
Is it early, or is this who the Rockies are?
It's who they are. Absolutely who they are, because listen, John Gray is going to give you a great outing and then give you two clunkers. You know, like that's the kind of pitching they have.
They're on par pitching wise with Cincinnati and Miami and the Texas Rangers.
It's not good.
And the Chicago White Sox, who I think are the worst team in baseball. They're on par with the Baltimore Orioles, who are 6-19. Why haven't you traded Machado yet? You're 6-19.
Yeah.
You know, like trading him in a month or at the All-Star break doesn't help you.
You better hope he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, well, and then there's that too. But I don't think it's early anymore. We're about to turn the calendar to May. It's not early anymore. And a lot of people, I think, have kind of lost perspective because, the weather's still cold. I agree. The weather in Chicago today was really cold. Jason Hayward dropped a fly ball, which that guy just doesn't do that. They found a way to win. Has it been cold for Javi Baez? Has it been cold for the hottest hitters in baseball? It hasn't. So my feeling is it's not early anymore. We're a month into the season now. So it's time for the real Washington Nationals to emerge. They've got to get to 500 as soon as they can. It's time for the real Chicago Cubs to be 10 over instead of 3 over.
Yeah.
You've got to get there as soon as you can. And I'm telling you that I'm hoping this is not who the Giants are.
I think it is. 100%.
Boy, that'd be tragic. Who's the best team in the American League? I mean, I think far and away it's the Boston Red Sox.
It's the Red Sox or the Astros, yeah. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I think the
Red Sox are probably playing the best ball right now, but I think overall best team. I think
the combination of offense defense goes to Boston, but I think the best pitching staff lies in Houston.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty sure about that. Yeah. Hey, by the way.
Yeah.
After you find us online at themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com, let's talk a little Korean Peninsula.
Denuclearization. Lit.
Kim Jong-un.
Rocket Man.
It's funny you bring up Rocket Man, because today, something I never thought I'd see in my lifetime, we saw President Moon and dictator Kim Jong-un, Moon from the south, Un from the north. They stood on the line, what's called the demilitarized zone, which is the line that separates the two countries, North and South Korea. And they hugged, shook hands. Kim Jong-un stepped from North Korea into South Korea. They hugged again, shook hands again, took a bunch of pictures. And President Moon started walking into South Korea saying, hey, let's go. Let's sit down and talk. And Kim Jong-un said, no. Come into my country. Come into North Korea. And Moon did it. And they shook hands and they hugged again. And then they walked back into South Korea and they sat at a table together all day long. And they signed documents that said, we are prepared to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula and we are prepared to end the Korean War, which is 53 years old. And Donald Trump deserves a huge amount of credit for this. And it's amazing because I never thought I would say this. Never did I think, as an Evan McMullen voter, never did I think I would say Donald Trump has a real good chance of winning a Nobel Peace Prize. Because if they truly do end the Korean War, denuclearize the peninsula, he's going to get 80% of the credit for putting them together.
Yeah.
Because he sent Mike Pompeo, who is going to be his Secretary of State, now is his Secretary of State, and at the time was his CIA director. President Moon straight up said, if he doesn't call Kim Jong-un the Rocket Man, we would never have believed that America would stand up to North Korea. Because what did Donald Trump do that guys like Barack Obama weren't willing to do? And I'm not an Obama hater. Donald Trump made it very clear that if you do business with North Korea, you're not doing business with us. And that if Rocket Man keeps doing his little tests, and as soon as he tests a missile that can reach the U.S., we're taking him out, which is essentially what he said. So President Moon said over the last couple of days and reiterated it today through his foreign embassy. They essentially said, if President Trump didn't take such a strong stance, we would not have had the confidence to reach out through back channels and say, hey, do you want to put this thing to bed? Do you want to talk? And all of a sudden, there was a collapse in North Korea. And I don't know how many people realize this, but Google search it. I think I even put it on the website yesterday. The North Korean regime does their nuclear bomb tests underground underneath a mountain. And so they did their last test, and it was a massive bomb. It was so massive that a short time later, the mountain collapsed. A mountain collapsed. And you know how they know the mountain collapsed? It caused an earthquake. And the sensors around, because it's so tense between... This is how remarkable this hug and handshake was today. The tension is so just at a high level between the two countries that they have sensors on the ground to make sure they know when tests happen, when there's troop movements at the border. Like, they just don't trust each other at all. The mountain collapse caused an earthquake, and the sensors picked it up. And so then everybody said, well, hey, let's get satellites over it. The mountain frickin' collapsed. So it was this perfect storm. And whether you're a Trump guy or not, he got really lucky here. Because the Rocket Man rhetoric, the my button's bigger than your button line, President Moon specifically referenced that big button talk. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
So, and we've got a long way to go. Like, the Korean Peninsula is not denuclearized right now. The Korean War is not over right now. We got a long way to go. And Rocket Man truly has to completely do a 180 and walk away from who he is, who his old man was, who his old man's old man was, generations through his family. He has to completely turn and walk away from those people. And he did something else today that makes you think he's ready to do that. So they're sitting there, right? And they're talking, the North Korean president and the South Korean president. And what do we know about North Korea? We know that North Korea is never going to say anything but life in North Korea is really good.
Yeah.
We have the best of everything. We are amazing.
Yeah.
But they do things like, so this historic event is happening, by the way, and this matters, right? This historic event is happening in North Korea. They didn't put it on TV. South Korea did it live when they hugged and handshook and stepped into the different countries. They did it live. North Korea didn't mention it at all on their state TV. In fact, they came on the air an hour later today. And when they finally went to regular programming, it was a cartoon about teaching kids. Like, apparently they have a cartoon that stars a pig that teaches kids how to behave.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Anyway, while all that was going on, the leader of South Korea says to Kim Jong-un, President Moon from South Korea, says to Kim Jong-un of North Korea, hey, you know, I'd really like to come to your country for a visit. I've always wanted to climb, and it's, excuse me if I get this wrong, Paektu. There's a huge mountain in North Korea called Paektu Mountain. Okay, that seems like a simple request, right?
Yeah.
Kim Jong-un turned him down, essentially, and was caught on an open microphone saying, I can't have you come to North Korea to do that. I'm embarrassed by our public transportation. Like, that's a profound statement. And people are like, what's the big deal? This guy has always said, well, we are state of the art. We are, like, because there's so many sanctions against North Korea that the North Korean people suffer. Like, they don't have food. A lot of them live on the ground. They don't live in homes. If they do have apartments, they live on top of each other. There's, like, tons of people in small apartments. And so for Kim Jong-un to say, yeah, I'm embarrassed by the infrastructure of our country. That was a huge statement for that guy. So all of this to say, I think Donald Trump could be in the running for a Nobel Peace Prize, which is amazing because the guy is anything but a peaceful man.
Yeah.
And can you imagine his elation? Now, if he doesn't get impeached before, who knows?
Not a big deal.
And I mean, I'm sure he would just run right back to the waiting arms of Stormy Daniels or whatever.
Right.
But Okay, sorry. I should say the large cleavage of Stormy Daniels.
Right.
He damn well might win this thing. And can you imagine his elation? He would no longer need Viagra because he would just be amazed if he could say, oh, I won a Nobel Peace Prize, just like Barack, just like Kenya's own Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the kind of rhetoric that guy would run out there. But that would just be, can you imagine the ceremony where Donald Trump wins a Nobel Peace Prize?
It would be the largest and most attended event ever for a Nobel Peace Prize.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Could you imagine that? Like, no. That would be...
No,
I couldn't. I can't even visualize that. I really can't even visualize that. Anyway, I guess that's the show for today. It's all right. We've been doing this an hour?
Yeah.
It's been an hour already. Amazing. Anyway, find me online, themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. And wherever you are, we're with you. If you're on an Android. If you're on an Android, you can always find us in Google Play. All you got to do is search The Monty Show. You can find us on iTunes. All you have to do is search
The Monty Show.
And you can find us on SoundCloud. It's really easy. All you have to do is search for
The Monty Show.
That's it. We'll see you Monday. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.